Death is a second away. People die every 5 minutes from a fentanyl overdose in America. There's 200 a day. It's a plane crash every day that's happening, and we're not doing anything about it, right? And so that's why we're here. The old way is out. The game's changed. The drug's changed. Intervention has changed. And treatment's got to change.
This episode of Die Sober discusses sensitive topics that may be triggering to some viewers. If you are experiencing an emergency and need help, please call 911 or contact the National Suicide Hotline at 988.
For non-emergency assistance, please use us as a resource. Visit us at thefirmaddictionconsulting.com or for more information, call us 615-210-6703. Next, what we're going to do is run everybody through what an intervention actually looks like, feels like, smells like. Mm-hmm. We might even mock up a room.
I'm with it, man. There's a lot of misunderstanding about what intervention actually is.
Right.
And people want to know. People need to know. And like, we got the information.
Right.
Let them know.
Substance abuse, depression, anxiety, all of them have spiked since COVID.
Yeah.
Overdose deaths continue to spike month over month.
Mm-hmm. We're six figures now as far as deaths.
Mm-hmm. We're seeing casual users of faux pharma, fake pharma pills, pain pills, Xanax, Adderall, whatever the deal. If it's available from a pharmacy, it's also being printed by the cartels. They've got fentanyl in them.
Yeah.
Right. X pills to ecstasy pills too. We're seeing casual users who are those people that are just trying to have a good time on a Friday night. Right? We're seeing casual users due to the level of fentanyl and xylazine in these pills. We're seeing casual users go to full-blown addiction.
Yeah.
Almost overnight. Right? And so,
especially in Nashville too. I mean, hell, how many people we see, you know, a group of, you know, six guys come in for a bachelor party and they, you know, take some bumps and do some lots of cocaine over a weekend and only three of them go home.
Yeah, man. What we're seeing is casual use doesn't stay casual use very often anymore. And my invitation is urgent to people out there that think that they have an issue to go ahead and create some accountability in their lives and tell people that they love, say, hey, I'm not okay right now.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, if I'm building myself up, if I'm brave enough to say, hey, man, I think I've got a problem, right? I need to tell a couple people to create some safety, to create some accountability. I need to say, hey, I need your help to get help.
Yeah.
Right? And that is the hardest thing to do. And I think that one of the blessings of COVID, since COVID, has been that more and more people are talking about therapy. More and more people are talking about recovery. More and more people are talking about the fact that they are anxious, they are depressed, that things can seem overwhelming, right? And so the stigma still casts a huge shadow, but it is coming back to us just a little bit.
Oh, it's coming down.
Yeah.
It's coming down. And I think you hit the nail on the head too. And it's because a lot of it is the casual use has gone up. And as a result, too, like some of the real full blown addictions have also gone up. But the one thing that I've noticed is, you know, the amount of resources, it's really stayed the same.
Right.
That's right. Where we come in. That's why we're here.
Right. You know, we could a topic we could probably shoot on for the next 6 hours, but weed's legal in a lot of states. So hey, what I'm doing is not illegal. The question I would ask is, I'm not worried about whether weed's legal or illegal. I think it should be legalized, to be perfectly honest, and taxed. But is it healthy for you because it's legal? Or are you using it as a crutch, right? And if you're using it as a crutch, I'm here to tell you there's better resources, right? There's a better way to bridge that gap in feelings.
Yeah.
You know, and... you know, I judge no one, you know, from the guy who has a beer and a half at night or a glass of wine. I'm not out here to call anybody in. hang a title on anybody. Guy who takes a gummy every day, you know, cool. If it works for you, it works for you. But, you know, our invitation is if it appears in your life that that substances are no longer a benefit, then I want to open the conversation. I want it to be normalized to be able to say, hey, I think I'm using a little bit too much. I think I'm relying on the vodka, beer, whatever, too much. I think I've fallen off track. And I think the more that that guys like us can have these conversations, the better off everybody's going to be, right? You know, families don't know how to have tough conversations.
No, they don't. And a lot of times too, it's almost like this, I'd rather keep the peace through ignorance than actually have that kind of conversation. Because there's a risk of confrontation. There doesn't have to be, but when you're not really sure how to make the approach, there's always like this fear in the back of families' minds of...
But there's also what we grow up with, we know is to be our normal, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever happens in my family and whatever I witness, that's normal.
Yeah.
Whatever you witness at your house, that's normal.
Mm-hmm.
And where I think we get to come in and be really useful in this series is let's take what normal looks like in your life and let's line it up with what healthy looks like in real life. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's a veer into like where we're going next. Right. Like if and when, you know, mom, dad, significant other notice behaviors and symptoms of substance use in a loved one, how best to bring that up, right? In my opinion, the best thing to do is take concrete. You present concrete fact.
Yeah.
Right? Say, hey, Jimmy, I noticed that there's a new dent in your car. Mm-hmm. I noticed that you've overdrafted your checking account. I've noticed that you've been staying up later. You've got different friends. You're going wild on social media. You know, you haven't been picking up the phone, whatever the deal is. When we see changes in behavior, I want families to be able to, instead of being scared and stuck in the sand syndrome, I want them to be able to start asking questions. Mm-hmm. Right. And confrontation for most people isn't healthy confrontation anyway, isn't, you know, a sixth sense. It's a learned deal. And that's why guys like me and you exist, right?
Exactly.
That's why we get to run all over the country doing intervention work, because mm-hmm. families don't truly know how to have a confrontation about substance use or about mental health. Mm-hmm. You know, in my mind, typically there is, trace this with a young person. You have an emotional wound or need to have fun, right? That starts the pattern. So we either got recreation and or feelings that I'd like to not feel, right? Unwanted feelings. So recreation, unwanted feelings becomes a pattern, right? I'm moving along the pattern. The pattern becomes more frequent.
Yep.
The volume becomes a little bit bigger. So frequency, volume go up, getting a little bit older. Maybe I've picked up a consequence or two.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm entering into an addictive cycle, right? And what you and I know about addiction is once addiction starts, it does not roll uphill.
No, it doesn't. I wish it did sometimes.
Would have been handy, right?
It would have been happening in my life. But dude, and it happens a lot of times so subtly. That like families don't notice it really until already gone.
Right. Normal can drop, right?
Yeah.
It can drop so slowly mm-hmm. that families can become accustomed to.
That's the new norm.
Right.
This is the new norm.
Right.
You know, and two, if it happens in slow increments that are hard to pick up, it becomes really hard for families to point out.
Mm-hmm.
Like you really can't be like, well, here's the intersection and here's when you crossed it, unless there's some kind of catalyst, some kind of a big event. Right. And it, like you said, it usually comes when it's already too late.
We get calls every week. I got one 2 days ago,
mm-hmm.
mom of a 32, 33 year old, somewhere in New York, Rochester. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
he's been living it, you know, living on the mom and dad dime since becoming an adult. Just failure to thrive. No real trauma that mom could remember. Mm-hmm. He's just never been pushed out of the nest. So the nest has stayed extremely comfortable, right?
Oh yeah.
I'm talking to a lot of moms and dads out there right now. The nest has stayed extremely comfortable. And so baby bird has not had to grow his wings, right? Baby bird hasn't had to leave the nest because food's left for him, right? Still got a car to drive, keeping up appearances, got his immediate needs met, or her immediate needs met. And here we sit, right? So 18 to 30 couple have gone by really fast, and normal has gone from bearable to, hey, what the hell are you guys doing?
Yeah.
You're active in your kid's addiction, mm-hmm, by enabling it, right? And, you know, in my book, enabling is not just putting $50 down on the counter saying, hey, go buy some drugs.
No, man.
I think the most enabling really is failure to confront.
And I would even say that there's two types of enabling. I mean, you got the innocent enabling, and then you got the desperate enabling.
Right.
And that's kind of like the innocent enabling side of things.
Well, the innocent part is innocent. The less, I'll call it the lower volume, mm-hmm, enabling is, I know what you're doing, or I may not know exactly what you're doing, but I know it's not healthy, but I'm not confronting you about it.
Right. Nailed it.
Right. Mm-hmm. I know that you're misdirecting your money, your time, your energy. But I'm scared for whatever reason to confront you about it.
Yeah.
To me, that's enabling, right?
Yeah, it is.
You know, they're out and out enabling, like, hey mom, I need $1,000 for an ounce of blow. Yeah. You know, okay, honey, here's a check.
That's the desperate.
That's enabling. The desperate.
I mean, I've seen moms who had never touched a drug in their lives be driving their kid to go cop dope, mm-hmm, so that they wouldn't have to be sick.
Right.
Just to keep the peace. Right. Knowing full well exactly what the problem is. That's an act of desperation. And that's what I mean by there's a difference between the two. And is one better than the other? They both contribute to the same thing.
Right.
They just look different.
Right. Families that learn how to say no are the families that
they win.
Get healthy. They end up getting healthy. And we use the analogy all the time. Family is driving a ski boat. The addict in the family is on a ski rope, right? The ski boat has to drive to health for the guy on the rope or the girl on the rope to get to health too, right? And so for moms and dads and husbands and wives out there who are seeing symptoms and behaviors of uptick in drinking, in drug use, in whatever coping mechanism there is, right? I think the best question I would arm them with is, hey, Zach, I've noticed that you're drinking more. Do you want to talk about it?
No. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. It really just depends on who it is. You can't do it without the proper coaching. It's almost impossible to have it go right. Like from a family member, that family member needs some guidance.
Right.
And obviously that's what we're here to provide too. But,
right,
you know, it a lot of it also has to do with like just tact, timing, good judgment, a little bit of prudence. You almost have to wait until there's a crack in the window to just be like, hey man.
Either a crack or
a big event.
Big event, like, mm-hmm, a highlight, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah.
I would invite families that are concerned for a loved one, I would invite them to, we call it a red flag list. Just start a red flag list, right? Work from current all the way back. And in doing so, I think a lot of families are able to go, oh, wait, we've been seeing this. This isn't a new thing.
Yeah.
You know, this newest car crash or this newest huge credit card bill or whatever the red flag is. This isn't new behavior. This is just the newest instance of the behavior that goes along, mm-hmm, with substance use, right? Along with red flag list, I love families to get involved in their own 12-step recovery. I love Families Anonymous. I love CODA. I love Al-Anon. I love it all. Families got to do the work first.
Yeah.
In my opinion, right?
Well, the addict, the alcoholic, they rarely change until the environment does, right? And if it's a failure to launch kind of situation, a baby bird didn't fly the coop, well, then the environment needs to change.
Right. And until the environment changes, baby bird will not, right?
Correct.
He or she does not have to change.
Right.
Alcoholics and drug addicts only change when it's demanded, right? And there can be a lot of kicking and screaming I think you can make the demand kind and loving. We certainly try to do that way.
Yeah.
Right. We start in the basement of suite, right? But we're also the guys that are going to coach families to bring real consequences and real boundaries to life if and when we're encountered with a no, right? Intervention, early intervention is my jam. I'd love it if we spent all of our time guiding families on early intervention, right? Let's talk about some signs and behaviors that families might be able to look for in their loved one that they may be concerned for, right? Okay. I'm looking for changes in communication pattern.
Yep.
I'm looking for changes in appearance, weight loss, weight gain. I'm looking for legal instances.
Yeah.
I'm looking for an uptick in impulsivity, uptick in either verbal abuse or becoming just fading away. I'm looking for if someone's involved in either a job, I'm looking at decreased job performance, or if they're in school, I'm looking for a decrease in attendance performance. Financials always are a telltale.
Financials are always a big one. Same with abrupt changes in sleep. That's a big one too. Mm-hmm. Why is my kid not going to bed until 5:30 in the morning and sleeping until 3 p.m.? And it's like, well, yeah. And why is he going through his Adderall script so fast? I've never really understood that. And it's like, he just needs to get up earlier. And then I think everything's going to fall in line with them. Mm-hmm. You know, those kind of statements that we hear all the time where it's they're not dumb. It's just, you don't know what you don't know.
Right. And it's almost like families can be kind of sheepish when they first engage with us because they feel like they've been like, man, we should have called you guys 2 years ago, or this has been going on far too long. We've got to have an answer.
Yeah.
I think it just takes really knowing what symptoms and behaviors and signs to look for. And also I want to give families some grace too, because you know, we are designed to find safety. Moms and dads, significant others, they love this person they're concerned about. So their heart is designed to help them find safety.
Yeah.
Well, Zach's been under a lot of stress lately, so that's why his sleep is messed up.
Mm-hmm.
Zach's been under a lot of stress lately because his girlfriend broke up with him and his job hours changed and whatever else, right? But when we're able to really get a decent enough 360 history from multiple family members, right?
That's the juice right there.
Exactly. Right.
That's what it is.
When you get a 360 from multiple family members from all angles, then we can really frame up, hey, this isn't a problem Jimmy just figured out on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Right. Jimmy struggled for 12 years.
Well, a lot of times too, but sometimes a big hurdle with the families is just a simple fact that of getting them to see this isn't a moral failing or a moral issue or anything like that. And it's not a reflection of their skills as parents.
An added bonus, since we live in the Bible Belt, though the Bible Belt shame, right?
Yeah.
It's real.
Yeah,
it's
it is.
It's palpable. You can touch it down here.
It is.
Right? In a lot of communities, you can touch Bible Belt shame around addiction and mental and emotional health.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's bullshit. Right?
Yeah.
I think it's complete shit. And I welcome, we welcome all walks, right? But there is a particular shame in this part of the country around. There's an additional layer to the stigma, I believe, due to being where we are.
Yeah.
Lots of moms and dads are just frozen by fear, right? If we put our heads down, this might just be a phase or a fad, right?
That's so common, especially with the younger guys.
Well, you see it all the time. We'll have one in the case. Let's say this is a young adult. Okay.
Okay.
Young adult male. Mom can't see what's going on, but dad knows the score.
Yeah.
Right. So you've got one parent who is, hey, my kid's got a problem. You have another parent or another family member who is slow to get on board.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and you can add a layer to it too. Cause you got a mom, sometimes he doesn't want to see, and a dad who he knows his way of fixing the problem is right.
Right.
Now there's another one too.
But the most common we see, mm-hmm. in my book, the most common, especially with young people, is divided households where there's been a divorce. Usually it's not been pretty, right? Yep. You got mom or dad leading the way, and we've got to somehow pull them together to be one unified front, right?
Yep.
When we intervene, right, we need a complete unified family.
Well, there has to be. I mean, if there's any gaps in that wall, that unified family front, we're going to find our way through it. The addict, the alcoholic is going to find a way through the smallest,
slightest.
Yeah, we're shapeshifters, dude. We could get through the bottom of the crack of the door if we need to. If there's an exit, we're exiting.
Right.
Right. Because it's uncomfortable. It's scary. It's everything in between. But like, we know, like, you're not growth and comfort. I wish they just don't coexist. Like, you got to go through a little bit of discomfort if you want to elicit new growth.
Right. So, you know, from first call to execution of an intervention, right? You get a call from mom of a young adult male. Run me through it.
First things first, info grab, man. The more the better.
I want info from mm-hmm. not only from her.
Yeah,
I want info from all the participating family members.
I do not want it from just the big personality who thinks he's the team captain.
Right. Again, we want a 360.
Everybody, dude.
I want medical history.
Mm-hmm. Right? Treatment history.
Treatment history, if any. I want. I also want family of origin history. Mm-hmm. I want everybody's recount of what it was like in this family system.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You can go back a generation, get real fancy. Right. Everything can inform why our person of concern mm-hmm. is sitting where he or she's sitting. Right.
And you know, the funny thing about the info grabs too, is you can usually identify pretty accurately who each player is. You know, you could usually take the info grabs and really determine, all right, like mm-hmm. who's the enabler here.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually more than one.
And when we say info grab, what we're saying is we're interviewing the family. What is your relationship
yeah.
to the person of concern? How has the person of concern's behaviors, how have they impacted you in your life? Mm-hmm. What have you witnessed in terms of how their behaviors have impacted their life? How has it impacted the family's life? These are the kinds of questions we're asking, yeah, right?
All the way to current state of that relationship. What is it like now, or what happened?
Right. So we got a family, and this again, this is hypothetical. Call one goes well. We set mm-hmm. a conference call with the remainder of the family, right? Most of the family anyway, to see if bringing an intervention to life is really the right thing to do at this mm-hmm. time for this person. Conference call goes well. We got what if questions answered. We've got everything lined out, right? It's a 2-hour call. We know exactly who we're dealing with. We know who the family members are. Mm-hmm. We know all about the person of concern. We're going to move forward. We're going to select a treatment center, right? And there's a lot of, that's a whole episode, but we're going to select the treatment center that fits the clinical need, fits the financial need, fits the geographical need. Help the family select there. We are unbiased. We don't participate in that.
Yeah, I mean, trying to do that on your own, it's like, you know, placing somebody who doesn't even know how to drive a boat just in the middle of the Atlantic and saying, like, hey, find Florida.
Right.
You know, well, it's very hard to do on your own.
And for families, Google is the worst place to find treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd help guide the treatment center selection. Pre-intervention. You want to bring a pre-intervention to life?
I love pre-intervention. Pre-intervention is one of family
day.
Things.
Family day to me is more important than a good family day is the predictor of how I day is going to go.
Yeah.
Right. So we've got willing family. We've got everybody locked in for family prep day. My favorite day. My favorite day of any.
I love prep day.
Prep day is the best. Prep day is when we get to see who the family really shows up as in their seats, in their roles, right? We get everybody in the same room. And the first thing I like to do is I like to go around the room and ask, it's kind of a trick question. 1 minute or less, why are you invested in this intervention?
Yep.
Right? Each, just go around the room. Somebody's going to take 19 minutes. Right?
Yeah.
Right?
Every time.
Because look, all I need is 1 minute. I just want to know why you're invested, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times what we see is it's more about them than it is the person of concern.
And it tells us so much about what we need to know from a family dynamic side. Because where my mind goes as an interventionist is when the person, they get on the microphone and they start singing for way too long.
Right.
What I know is like, okay, this is the person that I'm going to have to really be the quarterback for and call the plays.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta pull the strings. Well, I gotta govern the gas with them.
Right. And not calling anybody names, but sickness shows itself. Family sickness shows itself. Family dysfunction shows itself when the family is together.
Yeah.
Right. So I like to go around the room. Why are you invested in this intervention? And I like to make sure that everybody gets a chance to see that brother, sister, mom, dad, grandma, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll sequence the person who I know's on the fence. I'll ask them last so that they can hear all the other collateral, right? It's a great way to get everybody locked in.
Very much right? So.
And by the time we do it in person, we've asked that question in different forms several times over calls, over email. So we're really just securing lock-in.
Yeah.
Right? I go straight into current day, right? So I get everybody's buy-in and I want current day. Where is our person of concern? Do we know what they're up to? Do we know where they are? Is safety, have we put safety measures in place so that we can assume that they're relatively safe? And then
those answers are invaluable too, because whoever knows the most is usually going to be the one that you know for a fact has the cleanest line of connection to the person being intervened on.
Right.
Which also tells you that they're probably the person who's, you know, least threatening to the person being intervened on.
And most likely to give, if there is an invitation, give the invitation.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It helps with, you know, or figuring out the order of who may read letters first, who makes invitation first, like that guy or gal can be invaluable.
But when we go around the room the first time, if anybody's on the fence, that's when you attack that. Mm-hmm. Right. And when I say attack, what I really mean is I'd invite Aunt Sally to address grandma's hesitance, right? Or I would ask another sibling to maybe ask a question that would serve the purpose. So I might ask brother Bradley over here to explain to his grandmother why gifts at this point are not acceptable. They're actually a hindrance.
Sometimes use
the group to do the work for us, right?
Sometimes there's an intervention in the pre-intervention on a family member.
Most times there's the first intervention is on the biggest enabler in the family, right? We've got to secure the fact that they know that helping and loving as they know it has come to an end, right? We've got to redirect that. And that's why I like to go directly from that conversation right there into current safety, right? So we've got everybody checked in. We've got a relative measure of safety on the person of concern, and then brief you know, sometimes it can go long, but I like to get the addiction model, addiction as a disease model out to these families, right? I believe in it. I know you believe in it. It's how we do business. Addiction is a disease, and that's how we attack it. And, you know, I'll entertain all the questions that, families ask. But at the end of the day, we attack this as a disease and we do not negotiate. That's the deal, right?
Correct.
Lives are at stake, and sometimes we don't want to be, we don't want to rush things, but we do need to be quick. From the addiction model, I go straight into potential objections, right? Why would Zach say no to treatment, right? Zach might say, I've got financial obligations.
Well, you know, who's going to watch my dog?
Who's going to watch his dog?
What about work? I can't miss that. I've used all my sick days.
Yeah, but we know you just got fired. Well, so you're going to say, he's got an interview on Tuesday, so I can't go. Or I've got a doctor's appointment.
Yep.
I've got a legal, I've got a court date. Whatever those objections are, we want to get out in front of those. We want to identify all of the possibles, and we want to have them defeated, right?
Yeah, you want all the rebuttals just on a tray, ready to be served, and served by the right person on the family side.
Served by the right character to deliver that news. So if there's a financial saying, hey, I can't go, I've got to work, we know dad's going to cover the bills.
Or if it's who's going to watch my dog, if there's somebody in the family who's willing to do that, I want them to step up and be like, hey, man, I thought about that. I'll watch him.
Yeah.
It's cool. I got you.
Right. So we've got to forecast all the objections. We've got to give the right, we've got to make sure that the right character, you hit that nail on the head, the right character has got to be ready to deliver, right? The help that they will provide. And then we go into, you know, the letter writing process. And I don't want to bore anybody with that, but we have our own letter writing process where the families will write, each member of the family will write a letter that we help them craft, right? They're well thought out. They're to the same recipe. We want them to be quick hitting, fact first, emotion second, invitation to treatment. And we want them to sound, they are cookie cutter in how they're written.
The framework,
right? But that's only because we know we've got an attention span that's 30 to 45 seconds long.
Yeah.
We don't have room for a Sermon on the Mount.
No, you don't. And, you know, I always encourage the family member to practice reading the letter out loud as if they were reading it so that they could time it.
Right.
If it's 3 minutes to read it, I mean,
it's 2 minutes too
long. The guy's been checked out for 2.5 of those.
Right. Right. And so, you know, and I always kind of have it in my head who's going to read when, but I don't know until I day. Intervention day about when I can see how they're greeted, right? In the real energy in that room.
And even before, like the level of nerves that are in the room before the person being intervened on is even there. You know, maybe the guy I thought was the gal I thought was the strongest one and the most gentle one at the same time to kick it off. Maybe they're not. Maybe they need to see a couple people go first so they can settle down some and be able to deliver.
Right. And so we write letters, and then as a team, we have one list of consequences and boundaries that would be put into place should we invite this person to treatment and they say no. Then we've got one family spokesperson who's going to deliver the consequences and the boundaries, right?
Exactly.
And, you know, that's everything from I'm no longer going to buy your dog food when you've spent your money on drugs to, you know, you're no longer going to be able to live under my roof.
Yep.
Or I'll no longer speak to you about anything aside from treatment until you complete it, right? It's a huge, huge scale, right? And it's our job to help each member of the team bring their best to the table.
And also not bluff. You can't put anything on there that's a bluff. You know, everything correct. That the family constructs has to be something that they're willing to implement.
Right. And I think empowering the family to really realize just how generous that they have been. And that, you know, they're not by intervening, they're not betraying their loved one.
This isn't a punitive process.
No, it's not a punitive process. It's delivered with love and kindness, mm-hmm. right? At the core. But you're not betraying your loved one. You are attacking your loved one's disease.
I would argue that it's the ultimate portrait of love and kindness. Because what you're saying is, I love you so much that I'm not willing to sit by and just watch you kill yourself anymore.
Right. It's the most kind and loving thing a family can do to mm-hmm. invite and insist their loved one to take part of their own healthcare. Mm-hmm.
Right? I love you so much, I'll put myself in front of any reaction you may have, good, bad, or indifferent, to see you get help.
Right.
That's a show.
Right. And, you know, so the letter writing process can be really emotional, mm-hmm. right? So to wind it, kind of bring it back and wind it down, I like to give our families a timeline, right? So like in this case, we might be doing intervention tomorrow, mm-hmm. right? So I give them a timeline. Hey, we're going to meet at 9 a.m. We're going to have a check-in right around the corner from the actual intervention. We're going to check in. We're going to arrive together at Zach's house.
Yep.
At that time, when we walk in, Brother Bradley is going to invite Zach to have a family conversation about mm-hmm. his drinking and his drug use. Right?
Yeah, because my first question is going to be, who's the big dude in my living room?
Right.
What's going on?
Right.
Iron it out. Be clear. Be clear and direct. No secrets.
No secrets. Right? And, you know, and prep day is more about, it's getting the family familiar with how it's going to look and how it's going to feel. And we know in a perfect case scenario how it should look and feel.
Right.
Right? It's another day. Perfect rarely happens. So it's our job just to win. Really, family day is about preparing them to be at their emotional best and winning their confidence, making sure that they trust us and believe in us, so that on intervention day, we have their trust and their confidence. Exactly. Because when things get ugly, they get ugly quick.
Exactly.
As we know, right? Prep day for me ends with timeline. I lay it out. You know, this is what time we're going to meet. This is what time we're going to start. In an ideal situation, this is what time transport begins to treatment.
Yep.
And then, you know, I also lay out like a communication timeline from our team to them, right?
Yeah.
So when will they be contacted by a family coordinator? When will their loved one be, you know, what kind of updates are we going to receive from the facility and all of that stuff?
Ironing out the lanes and the flow of communication, the flow of information.
Right. And I always encourage our families to speak in email threads and text threads. No silos, because as we know, dysfunctional families love silos of information. So keeping everything in front of us and in front of everyone at the same time,
yep.
I think is the only way to go.
Yeah, I'll text a family member back. Hey, please repost this in the group thread or the group email.
Exactly, right? And I'll just assume that it was mm-hmm. a mistake that yep. they text or call me or you solo, right? But hey, it's just a reframe. We're teaching new behavior, mm-hmm. right? And at the end of prep day, I know we've done a good job when we can feel that there's no weak link, right?
Yeah.
When we know that everyone's bought in for the right reasons, mm-hmm. everyone's ready to deliver with love and kindness, and we get to a stopping point. That's when I know that we're good.
Oh, at that point, we're ready to press play.
Right. And I think, you know, the perfect prep, there's interventionists out there that'll run people through a 12-hour prep day. And I don't see the benefit.
You just wear them out emotionally before an emotionally trying day. Just right. To me, it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
It's probably not the best approach.
The way we do it, I think depending on the size of the crowd and the number of what ifs questions that we get, you know, I think it's an easy 2.5 hour deal start to finish. Mm-hmm. You know, with us handling all the logistics of entering treatment, flights and all that good stuff, we just leave the emotional work for the family.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way I've always done it. That's the way we believe it's done. It's the way we've seen it done best, over years. So I don't think there's any reason to change it now.
No, why would you? Yeah. It's my experience is the most efficient. It's the most productive. It's the most effective route to take.
Yeah. And it all starts and ends with quality communication up front, over communicating with the family so that they know what's next. If we can keep them from having to ask questions by putting information in front of them, we're all better off, right?
Nailed it.
And all it takes in inside a family is one person to get antsy question syndrome, and then we've got a riot.
Yeah.
Right? So the more forthcoming we are, right, the more we over-communicate, the better off everybody's going to be. Mm-hmm.